right, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. It is the Fan Drive Time, Ben Ennis and Stephen Bryant. I should say happy Thanksgiving Monday, because yes. I feel like it's a Thanksgiving weekend here in Canada. Nobody celebrates it on the same day. That's not that we have to do everything the Americans do, but what they do get right is Thanksgiving, where everybody well, first of all, everybody gets the day off on the Thursday.
Yes.
So that's key. That's important.
That's number one, right?
As we speak from work, our jobs on Thanksgiving Monday. But the Thanksgiving dinner is Thursday night. Everybody has it Thursday night, whereas, I don't know, some people have it Saturday. I had it Saturday. You had it yesterday.
Sunday, we had it yesterday. Yeah.
And some people have it today. I think we need to organize ourselves, because we can't punt on Canadian Thanksgiving. Like, I it's inferior. There's just really no debating. It's the inferior Thanksgiving to the Americans. You'll debate.
Well, I got to think about that. I used to work American Thanksgiving. I always went to Detroit to do the football game.
Yes.
So I spent my American Thanksgivings driving very, very early in the morning.
Okay, so for you, it wasn't so great.
To the Silver Dome back in those days, where although they did have a turkey dinner in the press box. So,
worth it.
Yes, and watching various awful iterations of the Detroit Lions, right? Yeah, that's what I did on American Thanksgiving. But yeah, it's, and then the Fridays, like the ridiculous go out and spend money.
Right? Black Friday. Yes. We celebrate that. We've taken that, but not the, like, taking work off on Thursday. For some reason, Canadians have co-opted mm-hmm. Black Friday, but not the other parts of Thanksgiving. We need a sporting event as well to unite us, I think, over Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there's some football today, which is, you know, that used to be, there used to always be CFL games on Thanksgiving, and then they kind of wavered on that at one point, I think, mm-hmm. like a lot of things. So there is that. There's lots of baseball today, although one less game than we thought there was going to be.
I was going to say it was the final possible day for the quadruple header, but we don't get the quadruple header. It's only a triple header. There's supposed to be baseball right now.
But no, so we can't. We have nothing to update you on at this particular moment. There will be more baseball this evening, though.
Yes.
So please stick around.
last thing on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Cornbread stuffing.
Yeah,
that's it.
I don't do turkey. I did a big roast yesterday, and I cooked. We won't go too deep into this, but you know, just having people back this year. Yeah. Like, I know last year you could sort of do it, kind of depending on where you were.
Yeah,
we didn't.
Maybe you did it on the sly. Like, there was no guilt involved with this year.
No, it was amazing. It really felt kind of like it's supposed to feel, and so I will give thanks for that.
It's not supposed to feel well. One. That the Kansas City Chiefs are below 500. That just feels weird. They've lost four of their last six, if you include the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very bizarre. And I guess at this point, you have to say the Buffalo Bills are the favorites. Well, at least to come out of the AFC. I mean, you can parse maybe with the Chargers, I guess.
That's where you've got to go. That's the only place you can go right now.
It's unbelievable.
It is. Now, it is October, and I believe they award the Super Bowl, the Lombardi Trophy, in February, correct? So there are things can happen. But I think, you know, I think it's funny. Like, we kind of set up that game. Going into that game last night, there was the sense, well, here it is. This is the big test for the Bills. They've got to go into Arrowhead, and they've got to face the mighty Kansas City Chiefs, except Kansas City has not been mighty.
No.
They've been wobbling this year. And we've had people on the show since the beginning of the season. On this show and then the other show, the earlier day in this day in the day show, mm-hmm. and I remember asking the question, you know, is there something wrong with Kansas City? Are they not? And you know, are they going to come together? Are they going to pull that offensive line together? Are they going to be able to run the ball defensively? Are they good enough? And a lot of people, as I recall, came on various NFL insiders and experts and said, no, don't worry, they're fine. They're going to be fine. They're going to be just fine. They're not fine. No, they can't run the ball. Their number one running back suffered a nasty, although it's not as bad as it looked, but he's going to be gone for a while.
Stop drafting running backs in the first round.
Yeah, I guess that's because it appears you don't have to.
No.
But that O-line is not good right now. You know, Patrick Mahomes, he can't do it all on his own. Defensively, I'm not sure who they can stop right now. Like, there's just, you know, we saw them get, it's almost like the Tampa showed the formula in the Super Bowl, said, this is how you beat these guys.
Yeah.
But they're not as good as they were then either. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that they've already shown. And then to run into a team that right now is the best team in the AFC on both sides of the ball and just had their, you know, their heads handed to them. I'm not sure I think the Bills were that going into that game. I think we could have said all those things about the Bills, but I think that game in some ways revealed more about just how bleak. Well, bleak's the wrong word for Kansas City, because it's probably still a playoff team, but But man, maybe they're not a playoff team.
I still think they are. And I know that division, and I think they're dead last in that division right now in the AFC West. And yes, they have another Chargers game. The Chargers already beat them once this year. I get that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Broncos are going to stick it out for 17 games. And the Raiders certainly feel like they're in a bit of a free fall at the moment.
Yeah, that's the other question I believe we asked various experts was, are the Raiders for real? And everybody said, no, I don't think so. They were right about that one, okay? They were right about that one.
I like to do the thing with the Chiefs about, because they've shown this before, that they can get bored during, hey, a 16-game regular season, let alone a 17. Give them an extra game, they're going to be so bored. But it's, we always think these things are going to last longer than they do.
Yeah.
So they.
That is true.
So they run into the New England Patriots, and Dee Ford goes offside, and they come that close to being in a Super Bowl and probably winning it. Then they win one.
Yes.
And then they lose one.
Yes.
And
that's kind of a window, right? If you think, right? Think of the great, all these great, you know, pick your team, pick your Super Bowl winning team that gets there more than once in a 3-year span. They do have a life, kind of a lifespan, don't they? They really do.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and we, like, I was going back and I was thinking of potential dynasties or burgeoning dynasties that never were. And the one that I keep coming back to is the Aaron Rodgers one. He wins the Super Bowl. They go 15-1 the next season. Lost in the first round that year, have yet to make it back to a Super Bowl. It's I get it. Patrick Mahomes is going to be great, and he is still great and was great in that game at times, although not as great. And you know what? If Tyreek Hill was able to hold on to a couple of balls, like there's a pick six that's a direct result of Tyreek Hill being unable to hold on to a ball. But guess who else has been great for a decade plus? Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And they have not made it back to a Super Bowl. So it's not over for Patrick Mahomes, but you can still be, I mean, we would agree that Aaron Rodgers is what? A top five quarterback of all time?
Yes.
And
he'd be on my top five list. I'm just thinking here. Yes, he would be.
I think so, right? Yeah, yeah. It's like Brady, it's Manning.
Montana's on mine forever, Montana, so he doesn't ever get pushed off mine.
Yeah, and Breeze, you can kind of quibble, I suppose. But yeah, no, I think I'd take, I mean, at their peak, I would take Rodgers over Breeze.
And, yeah, probably, yeah.
And he makes one Super Bowl. That's it. Mm-hmm. And like maybe they make the Super Bowl this year, and certainly they've turned it around since that week one throwaway game against the Saints. I'm just saying, the idea that the Chiefs are just going to be forever in our lives as this team that, like, because we're coming off this Patriots dynasty where they did it for two decades. That's unusual. It's almost impossible.
They're the different. They're the different as species here. And they did it with different, you know, you can, again, look at the other than Brady, the change in the supporting cast year after year. So Brady and Belichick were the constants, obviously. But no, look, I think it's a good point, Ben, that if this is kind of, you know, it's not like the end of the Chiefs, but if this is the end of that kind of peak.
Yep. Like they're not the 70 win or 72 win Golden State Warriors, right? Like this is like the Warriors, hey, if they get healthy and Klay Thompson's back and Steph Curry's not going anywhere, they can compete. But like the idea that it was just, hey, meet us in the finals year after year after year. That might be done.
And I'm thinking of teams, you know, that where people kind of said they've reinvented offensive football, right? That like the St. Louis Rams, right? Greatest show on turf team, right? But that was 2 years as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Won one, lost one.
Yep.
Then they're done.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Lost to Brady.
Yeah. So I think there's a pattern here. Now, I think Mahomes is still, obviously Mahomes is still spectacular, but there was a kind of a desperation in his play last night.
Yes.
You know, because you could, you know, again, they could not run the ball.
They knew it.
And they knew it. And he was trying to, he was overplaying in a lot of ways. His receiving corps certainly didn't help him out. And the pick six was not, you say, that's the end of the game, pick six. Yeah. That's not in any way his fault. But even at the moment that happened, I didn't, you know, and that's after the crazy rain delay and all of that stuff. I still felt, you know, that just kind of like the fundamentals weren't there, that the Bills still were better than them in every phase of the football game.
Well, that's it. And the Chiefs felt like they knew that they had to put up seven every single time that Patrick Mahomes had the ball. If they weren't scoring seven, you looked across the other, on the other sideline, Josh Allen was.
Yeah.
That Buffalo Bills team was, which is, it's a flip of the script because that was, You never settle for field goals against Kansas City Chiefs. You're doing them a favor. Every time you exchange 3 for 7, you're going to lose that football game. And it just felt like a reversal of roles. I think there was, though, a kind of a crucial moment in that fourth quarter, right, where it's an 11-point game, mm-hmm. I want to say. And the Bills, they have a third down or something. And I think it was like 3rd and 15, and it was a roughing the passer penalty that extends the drive for the Bills, and they go down the field and they score the touchdown. Josh Allen was great running the ball yesterday as well. But we're just at a point now where there's no questions left for this Buffalo team,
nope.
Right?
Just I presume they're going to keep beating people because there's no reason to think otherwise.
They were a middle-of-the-road defensive team a season ago. The offense, okay, maybe you questioned whether the offense was the same considering they had such a slow start against the Steelers in week 1 and they hadn't really, through a couple of weeks, they hadn't really put up huge points. And then they just blow out the Texans. They blow out a couple of teams.
Bad teams, right? But they blew out bad teams. But and I guess, look, they've got the Titans next, right? So we'll get to see them try and stop Derrick Henry. Like, we'll get to see if that is an issue for them.
Can anybody do that?
Well, not you stop them enough to win the football game. Yeah. Stop them completely. No. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a different challenge than what they just had, but boy, no, it's got that feel of a team that's, you know, kind of everybody's at the right stage in their career. They have enough veteran guys, but they're not old. The quarterback is just coming into his own. Their running game without a big time running back is still fine.
Yep.
Just it's enough. They're super confident. They're healthy. Like, what's not to like?
Well, and now they have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs. I don't know if they must play the Chargers. So that'll be huge in deciding who, because there's only one bye in the AFC, right?
Mm.
Here's the biggest advantage they have. They play in the AFC East, which is an absolute dog's breakfast. Congratulations to the New England Patriots who beat the lowly Houston Texans yesterday.
Made it exciting.
On a last-second field goal, my survivor pool team, which I thought, you know, coming off a loss to Brady, is Belichick really going to lose to the Texans, a team that any year they seem to dominate, and especially this year? And they needed a big second-half comeback to beat the team by 3 that the Bills literally beat 40-0. You got the Dolphins getting elbowed in the head every single Sunday, and the Jets are the Jets. Like, it is that feels like a layup 6 wins for the Bills.
It does feel like a layup 6 wins. Yeah, I can't see any other way. Like, yes, we'll have a Belichick moment where we'll do the, you know, will Bill Belichick come up with something so brilliant that this Bills offense will be baffled by it and slowed down. I think it's a gimme. Their division's a gimme this year. We kind of knew that going in, right? Like, you thought, well, maybe Miami will be a little better.
I think some people thought the Patriots were going to sneak up on people.
I think they're still, you know, the Patriots still are going to be are a good defensive football team.
Yeah.
That are going to stay. They're going to be in a lot of games, but they're not ready yet. It's not time, right? Yeah. It's not time for this group. So, yeah, that's the division's a gimme. The one team that kind of is out there that you say maybe is as good as they are in the AFC are the Chargers, right? And that's kind of it right now. There's those teams in the Central. Obviously, they lost to Pittsburgh, which is a little, you know, it's kind of hard to fathom how they lost to Pittsburgh in week 1 now.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Cleveland's, you know, Cincinnati's going to have trouble now, especially with stuff that's going on with them and their inability to, well, everybody's inability to kick field goals. There's that game. That was the other thing, the 5 missed field goals.
I have the number, actually.
Watched that one. That was...
So did I.
Because it's perversely fascinating.
It was incredible. Week 5, kickers missed 12 extra points, ties an NFL record. Kickers also missed 12 field goals per ESPN, first week to have at least 10 missed field goals and at least 10 missed extra points since the point after touchdown was moved back from the 2-yard line to the 15-yard line in 2015. 12 missed PATs ties the mark set in 2016. So you wanted that extra point to be not 100%. Congratulations. We live in that world.
It has been accomplished. That was stunning. But there it is. Can any of those three teams give the Bills a go in a playoff game on their best day? Could a Baltimore or a Cleveland, you know, probably not Cincinnati, but a Baltimore or Cleveland, could they give the Bills a go in a playoff game?
Yeah.
Could the Titans give the Bills a go in a playoff game in bad weather or something? You know, that's kind of what we're down to here. And, you know, there is a long way to go. But there's nothing, like, I can't pick apart the Bills at all.
No.
I can't sit here and say, wow, just wait. I don't see it. Well, I don't see it.
I mean, that's what happens when you have the number one scoring offense and the number one scoring defense.
Strangely, yes.
In the entire NFL. All right, we're going to talk to Dan Shulman in a couple of minutes here. I did want to talk about that Red Sox-Rays game, and I didn't get many tweets, by which I mean none. So I guess our public service announcement last week about these MLB Network games, it got through to people. The only person that got on my case was my dad, because he couldn't find the game.
Yes, well, that's what parents are for, to call you and say, where's the game?
I couldn't help him, because I don't think he subscribes. But yes. If you were lucky enough to have MLB Network, which I am, understandably, you saw madness in the 13th inning. But if you're a Blue Jays fan, you've seen this before, because there's a strangely enough, it was the Rays that were playing the Blue Jays, and it was Randal Grichuk who hit a ball that was bobbled by the left fielder out of the field of play, should have scored a run. Instead, runners were placed at second and third, like yesterday, Kevin Kiermaier with the double to right field. Hunter Renfro boots it over the right field fence after it hits the fence. And instead of scoring the go-ahead run, it's second and third, two outs. The Rays don't score it. And, of course, the Red Sox walk it off with a two-run homer in the bottom half of that inning. It's the rule. It was interpreted correctly, and understandably so, because they talked to New York, so they got it right. It's just a bad rule.
It's a weird rule. It's a very strange rule, because it seems to benefit the wrong team, right? It does seem to benefit the team that makes the mistake, essentially. Yeah. So, it is a very odd rule. It is the rule. There's no real debating it. It was a pretty significant moment in the ball game, though.
I think so.
Although, this whole series, right? I assumed wrongly that, the Rays, having been magical all year and smarter than everybody else all year and winning, 97 games and doing it with all of their...
100.
Yes, or 100 games, I'm sorry, with all of their remarkable creativity and IQ and all that stuff, would IQ their way past a Red Sox team that was, hot garbage, really, but masquerading as a contender. And I was dead wrong. So I'm dead wrong so far. I admit it.
Yeah.
Like, I hate it. But, the Rays look a little frazzled here, don't they?
So the pitching has been generally good, except for that Shane Baz didn't exactly.
No, Shane Baz kind of looked like a rookie. Yeah.
Other than that, though, I mean, they go through 100 pitchers a game, and generally, including yesterday, they've been good. It's that Rays offense that was such a juggernaut the second half of the season has yet to really show up in the postseason. There's still time to go I guess game four goes tonight on Sportsnet. Our next guest will be calling that game on the radio. It is Dan Shulman who joins us right now. How's it going, Dan?
It's going great. I am in my perch here at Fenway Park.
Amazing.
It's a beautiful day. Everything is good.
Yeah, that is great. It is great to see you traveling and more play-by-play teams traveling. Do you carry a rule book with you? Do you have a copy of the Major League Baseball rule book? Because umpires are not supposed to. I remember as a former Little League umpire, you're not supposed to carry the rule book, so the manager can't ask you if you have it on you, because you're not supposed to have it.
So let me tell you, this is without any embellishment. If there is a worse feeling in the world than calling a game and simultaneously trying to find something in the rule book, I don't know what it is. Like, I'd rather get locked out of my car. I'd rather be trapped in the attic, anything, rather than trying to find something in the rule book. And I've never been in the attic, so that's not going to happen. But rather than find something in the rule book. So I don't carry it, Ben, because if something happens in a panic, I will Google ball hits outfielder and bounces out of play, and then I'll see if anything comes up. But still, I've learned that there's, it's a rabbit hole, and the further down I go, the more I'm going to get myself in trouble. So that's a very unusual play. I don't love the rule either. It's funny that is generating a ton of conversation even today when there were so many other things that happened in the game. But it's one of those, who said life is fair? The rule is the rule, and it worked against the Rays last night.
It'll be a tricky rule if they decide to rewrite it, Dan. It's going to be I've been thinking about how you rewrite that rule.
Just
I don't
leave room for interpretation by the umpire.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yes, let's give the room for the umpires more leeway to decide the course of the game, because that'd be better. Right?
I'll tell you this. So, if the ball just bounces, bounces out of play, it's a ground rule double. We all know that it's two bases.
Yep.
But if a fan reaches over, say somebody hits the ball down the right field line, it's fair. Then it bounces into foul territory, and a fan reaches out and interferes with a live ball.
Yeah.
The umpires have discretion on placing base runners on that play. Why that play and not the other play, I don't know. So there is a little bit of precedent if they wanted to say, let's just give the umpires the discretion to do it. And I actually wouldn't mind that. I think that's better than what happened last night. But this is a once every few years kind of a play. It just of course, because it's baseball. Yeah. It happened to happen, you know, at a pivotal moment in a playoff game.
It kind of reminded me of the deflected throwback to the pitcher in the
And
that, you know, that
Shin-Soo Choo.
The epic inning where everybody in the building was going, hang on a second, what's the rule? What happens here, including the guys on the field? It had a bit of that vibe. And look, you're right, Dan. You know, maybe this could be solved by umpires. I have a hard time saying that sentence out loud. That's all, right?
I understand.
So what is happening to the Rays in this series? And if they win tonight, they got a game five in their own building. They could still win the series, obviously. But it is baseball, so it's hard to say these words, but it is true that they were the decided favorites going into this thing, and it felt like a mismatch on paper. What has happened in the series so far, Dan?
A couple of things in my mind. Their pitching, which was still really good this year, hasn't been as good, obviously, in this series. It was good in game one, although Alex Cora walked out of game one saying, you know what, we hit the ball really hard. We hit the ball as hard as they did. We just hit it at people. And he didn't say it in a snide way. He said it in a we're feeling okay about ourselves way. And then, listen, all Blue Jays fans know, every now and again, the Red Sox are just going to get rolling, right? And they got rolling in game two. And it looked a little bit worse than it was because Michael Wacha came in and gave up six runs late. But even without that, it was still an 8-6 game. Their pitching just, and maybe it's their youth. You know, maybe as we sit here in Toronto when we say, you know what, Vladdy and Bo and these guys, they have to go through some things. Maybe Shane McClanahan and Shane Boz and those kinds of guys have to go through some things, although Wander Franco evidently doesn't. He's unbelievable. He's going to be a problem for a number of years. He's a great player. The other thing that's happened is Brandon Lau, who is arguably their most important position player, is 0-14 with 6 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, put it into a Blue Jay context. Imagine if the Blue Jays were down 2-1 in a series, and we were talking about Vladdy, but it doesn't matter, one of the key guys, Simi and anybody, being 0-14 with 6 strikeouts. Like, Brandon Lau tried to bunt for a base hit with 2 strikes on him in last night's game. That's how badly he's feeling at the plate right now. You can see, and he struggled last October as well. You just feel for the guy. He's a good guy and a very good player, and it's just not happening right now. But they've got to get a good opener-type outing out of Colin McHugh, and then you know Kevin Cash is going to roll out Fairbanks and all of his big guys in the 4th, 5th, 6th inning if the game is close, and they got to try to find a way to hold down the Red Sox, who have 3 or 4 hitters who are just crazy hot right now.
Yeah, it's got a funny, like, I was going to say, Dan, do you have any sense of where this is headed? I feel a kind of a sense of inevitability about the Red Sox right now, right? I have no rational reason for saying that because everything right. Going to this series, I would have. I would have withdrawn money from my savings account and bet it on the Rays. And I had great faith in Rays ball and Kevin Cash ball and all of those things they do. But, again, maybe having watched the Red Sox kind of scuffle to the finish, but there is, you know, sometimes a series has its own dynamic. And this one, that's kind of the, I don't know what it feels like there in the stadium tonight, or on the field before the game, what it's going to be like. But, it just feels a little panicky on the Rays side to me.
Yeah, which is very un-Rays-like, yes. Right? Like, as you said, the Rays always, okay, you're going to punch, we'll counterpunch. You'll counter our counterpunch, we'll figure it out. And, like, who figures it out better than the Rays? So I think they feel good, but I think, I just spent some time with Kevin Cash down in the dugout, the manager of the Rays, and they've got to start doing some things better. He wants to push some guys maybe longer than an inning who usually go an inning, but if it takes them 25 pitches to go through an inning, he can't do that. So they've got to come in. The pitchers have to come in and do well. And for all of the, the Red Sox don't deserve to be here, and I understand all of it. Like Kyle Schwarber, Kike Hernandez, Rafael Devers, Xander Bogaerts, Alex Verdugo, J.D. Martinez, Hunter Renfro, who hit 31 home runs, and you're in the 7th spot tonight. Like, they can still hit. They are still the Red Sox offensively, and I think they've just had great at-bats, really smart at-bats, too. I know one of the things they decided to do coming into the series is the Rays throw a ton of strikes. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox said, don't try to work him for walks, guys. If you see a good one early, go get it. Because you're going to get a better pitch to hit 0-0 than you are 0-2. And I think they've done a really smart job knowing what's coming sometimes, knowing strikes are coming and swinging the bat well. And then every now and again, though, like, how do you account for Kike Hernandez going 5-for-6 with 3 doubles and a homer? And every now and again, a guy has a Cody Ross, a Marco Scudero kind of series, mm-hmm. and that can swing it in the direction of one team. So I'll tell you, the Red Sox are not overconfident. They can't be.
Yeah.
And I think that once it gets into the bullpens, Now that Pivetta's not a factor tonight, obviously, I still think the Rays have the better arms through the later innings of the game. It's just, can they get a lead early?
Yeah, who knew Nick Pivetta would turn into Madison Bumgarner for like four-plus innings yesterday? In a 13-inning game, you would have definitely favored the Tampa Bay Rays in that bullpen to win the baseball game, but they didn't. If this thing does get to a Game 5, I'm interested in what you think Chris Sale's impact is going to be. I mean, I guess he's available out of the bullpen now. He's been so brutal his last two starts. Like, you would have felt good about him if you just put the name on paper and you're a Red Sox fan, but he has just been not the same guy as he was really coming off the IL. He had some good starts there for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and you wonder if he's just kind of run out of gas and needs a winter to get the arm back where he wants to get it. But I don't know. I think there's a better chance he actually has a minor role tonight than a major role in a Game 5. And here's what I'm thinking. So Eduardo Rodriguez, a lefty, starts for the Red Sox. And at some point, obviously, second, third, fourth inning, who knows, he comes out of the game. And then Alex Cora goes to a righty. And I think all he's trying to do is force Kevin Cash into a couple of moves. Do you take Luplo out and bring Choi in? Do you take Diaz out and bring Wendell in? And so that the next time around, now Kevin Cash is stuck with like four lefties in a five-batter stretch. And maybe that's when Sale comes in, just to face those lefties in the fifth inning, you know, four or five batters, and that's it. I could see that happening. Now, the thing is, Kevin Cash knows Alex Cora is going to try to do that to him. And I love these kinds of games. I like the chess match, actually. So I'm really looking forward to it. But I think there's a good chance Sale is in the middle innings for four or five batters, and that Tanner Houck is the Game 5 starter if the Red Sox need a Game 5 starter with the way that he's pitched in this series.
That seems to me, Dan, I'm just as you're saying that, like if the Rays get through this series, aren't other teams in a playoff series, isn't that what makes sense, the way you attack this Rays lineup, the way they deploy the righty-lefty splits, that you do exactly that? Whoever they play in the next round is going to do exactly the same thing?
Well, it depends on the kind of starting pitching you have. I mean, if you're rolling out three guys who you think can go seven innings, you're leaving them in there, right, three times through the order and all that. It depends on what your pitching staff looks like as well. But again, and I talked to Kevin Cash a little bit about it in the dugout just about 20 minutes ago, and he aligns his lineup in such a way as if to anticipate what's going to be done so that if he does have to make those moves, he still leaves himself with, say, a righty in between a couple of lefties so that a left-handed pitcher can't come in and face three lefties in a row. Like, if you look at the lineup, Jordan Luplo's hitting fifth. Jordan Luplo's not the fifth best hitter or in the, you know, the normal number five hitter. But if he's got to make a move, and now Joey Wendell or G-Man Choi are still are in that spot, now he's got the righty in Yandy Diaz hitting after him. He's got the righty in Nelson Cruz hitting before him. So he can still kind of stagger the lineup within reason. So, you know, we may be talking about smaller advantages rather than overwhelming advantages. But, yes, the other danger, though, is do you want to get into this kind of a game with Kevin Cash when Kevin Cash does it all the time, right? He's used to the more chaos there is, the more the Rays are at home. Other teams have to get used to it a little bit. But I love it. It's almost like a National League-style game in the American League, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I love it as well. Hey, before we let you go, Dan, I imagine you're not watching much of any of the other American League division series between the White Sox and Astros, but I imagine you saw the little back and forth, and started by former Blue Jay Ryan Tepera, who he said, I think you saw the swings and misses tonight compared to, you know, the first two games at Minute Maid, in reference to potentially some more untoward activities happening on behalf of the Astros. I mean, you talk to players. You're now down at the ballpark. Do you think this is still happening with the Astros, or is this head games?
I don't know if it's either. I don't think it's still like nobody's banging on trash cans, obviously. If the Astros are doing anything, I don't think they're doing anything more than any other team is doing. They're under a different manager right now. I don't think Dusty would have that on his watch. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't think that would be the case. And, I mean, they did put six runs up on the board in Chicago in Game 3, so they swung the bats pretty well there. I don't know if Tepera knows something or if it's head games, but I don't know if you want to introduce that if you don't know it's happening. So, as you said, Ben, I have not been able to watch the games because they're always either directly before or after my games, and I just haven't been able to see all that much of it. But at this point, if you're the Astros, boy, you'd have to really like risk to be doing something right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so my suspicion is nothing is happening. And to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised to see Ryan Tepera talk about it.
Ah, it's another headline, another thing for us to talk about. So I appreciated it. Dan, you know what else I appreciated? You know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your call of the Randy Arozarena steal of home.
Awesome. Awesome call.
Believe it. Was that the, like, most excited you've ever been to call a baseball play?
Top five, I would say, and I think you can find this online, the first World Series I did for ESPN Radio was 2011.
Andy Chavez.
The David Freese game in the World Series, six of the World Series, St. Louis, Texas. If you go back and listen to that triple and especially the homer, that one might have exceeded it. But it was tremendously exciting. And to bring this back around to where we were at the beginning, literally in the moment, as I am calling the play, my inner voice is saying, thank God I'm in the ballpark. Thank God I'm in the ballpark. Because I wouldn't have seen it. No chance. Wouldn't have seen it. All I would have seen was the cloud of dust at the plate. And it's really a terrible feeling. You know, you want to do your best for the viewers and the listeners. And we all understand the situation and you know, the changes that have had to be made. But I am just so happy to be in the ballpark calling these games. It makes a huge difference.
Amen to that. It was a great call. Thanks for this, Dan.
Talk again soon. Okay, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
You too. Dan Shulman in the ballpark, Fenway Park, for Game 4, Rays and Red Sox. I hadn't even considered that, but he's absolutely right. Like, there's absolutely no way he would have seen Randy Arozarena halfway down the line and then taking off when he did, because he calls it before the camera pans to him.
Well, you've seen the setup with when the guys are calling the games away from the stadium, just so we can, you know, we can now pull back the curtain on all this stuff. Like, they have a set of monitors that are, you know, pretty extensive, right?
Yep.
They get a, you know, every camera in the building, essentially, they have all those views. But to see a guy who's halfway down the third base line make that first step towards home, there's no chance you're going to pick that up. But that's something you would see. But if you're in the ballpark, you would see it out the corner of your eye and go, oh my God. And that's the feeling of that call. You'd had to, you know, if there's only a couple of seconds, like, think about it. Like, the time between you when you see that and calling it. This is why play-by-play guys blow my mind all the time. But to process that and to call that as beautifully as he did, just the perfect call.
It is.
And a crazy moment. And yeah, thank God Dan was in the ballpark for that, because we were all better off for it.
Oh, it was an incredible, incredible call. Before we do take the break, I want to echo Dan's sentiment about the Astros there, where, okay, yes. Maybe they're doing something, but the something might just be relaying signs when there's a runner on second base. The idea that I understand they weren't actually punished. The players themselves were not punished.
Yeah.
But go ask those players. It wasn't fun to go out in front of the media and address what was confirmed by Major League Baseball as this cheating ring, to risk the potential of having to do that again. And then at this point, you would figure Major League Baseball would have to punish the players to some degree. I cannot, my cynical brain, as cynical as it may be, that's a level of cynicism I cannot reach, where the Astros are doing something similar technologically to cheat.
It would be unwise. Like, I don't think the White Sox didn't go through another World Series right after that one. The Black Sox series. They didn't immediately step out.
Were they in jail?
Yeah. Bribe us. We're available. No, yeah, it would be reckless. I'd say, yeah, it would be reckless. No, I don't. It was interesting that Tepera, like, if it was kind of a head game thing, it's interesting that, you know, that is Ryan Tepera doing it. And, you know, Lord knows he pitched well enough. I guess you get to do it. Yeah. But yeah, maybe forevermore, if you're playing the Astros, you always, that's a card you get to play in the playoffs. You, well, not sure.
Yeah,
they seem to be better at home. I guess you're allowed. And that's no one's fault but the Astros.
Yep.
So if he's just yanking their chain, I guess that's the minor price they have to pay.
And we'll see how it plays out the rest of the series, because they're back in it. Yeah, in a best of five, you win one game, all of a sudden you're back in it, and the Blue Jays know all about erasing 2-0 series deficits in best of fives. When we come back, let's go back to Buffalo. Let's talk to Jay Skursky, Bills reporter for the Buffalo News. Next, as the Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
From the 47-yard line, Bills in shotgun again. Josh gets it, looks, gets away from pressure, rolls to the right sideline, fires it downfield, got a man wide open, caught. Dawson Knox makes the catch at the 15, cruises into the end zone, touchdown Buffalo! Dawson Knox got open, Josh Allen prolonged the play, and the Bills cash in on two plays to take another touchdown. Wow!
It was good. I mean, it was one of those games. I was talking to some of the guys. I know we didn't have a lot of plays. We didn't have really a lot of third downs, really a lot of first downs. But we had a lot of explosive plays. Guys got open, made some unbelievable plays.
Well, they were at the airport to welcome Josh Allen back to Buffalo at 5 o'clock in the morning, this morning, after his Buffalo Bills came away victorious at Arrowhead yesterday. I was watching a little bit with my son, who he's 6. He sleeps in the same room as his 3-year-old brother. So he likes to wait for him to fall asleep, and then he like sneaks up to watch dad watch sports.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about going to a Bills game. And I said, I don't know, son. Like, I think you got to be 18-ish to go.
18. I've took my kids there when they were. It was an interesting experience for them. They learned some stuff.
Yeah.
They saw a guy sucker punch. Actually, a guy was carrying. I will tell you, I know we got to talk about the actual game, but we were at one of those Canada Day games, and a guy, they were playing like, it wasn't like Miami or the Jets where they hated. It was no hate, right? It was like Cincinnati or somebody. And a guy walked down, he was carrying his kid, like a toddler, walked down the aisle, and somebody said something to him in the stands. He went down, handed the toddler to somebody else, walked back up, and hit the guy in the face. He sucker punched him. And then this huge brawl erupted. It was awesome. My kids thought it was the best. It was the best part of the day for them, I got to tell you.
So, yeah, 18-ish, maybe 28-ish. I don't know. All right, let's talk to Jay Skursky, Bills reporter for the Buffalo News. How's it going, Jay? Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Doing well.
All right, so let's just lay it out on the table. The Bills, Super Bowl favorites right now, today.
Well, I mean, you know, they just beat the defending, you know, AFC champions. You know, we'll see them play, you know, the defending Super Bowl champions later this year. I think you could, you know, reasonably make a strong case that they're the favorites at least to get to the Super Bowl. You know, how do they match up against the NFC's best? We don't really know that just yet. But, you know, certainly I think what they've accomplished here the last month or so of the season, and particularly obviously what they accomplished against Kansas City, I mean, you know, anybody that's saying that they're the top team in the NFL or the top team in the AFC, I think has a lot of evidence to point to kind of support that case.
Yeah, well, now we are saying it in October. There are many miles to travel before February. But, man, I have a hard time. We talked a little bit before you came on about, you know, Kansas City is not, you know, they've had issues this year in general. I know people kind of have been waiting for them to snap back and look like, but, you know, they had offensive line issues. They've had running game issues. They have defensive issues. They're not maybe where they were, you know, heading into the Super Bowl last year. But, you know, again, I can't take one thing away from the Bills. Make a counter argument here, you know, like, help me, you know, where's the flaw here right now in terms of defensively, offensively, in terms of confidence, in terms of kind of the mix of youth and veteran players? Like, they've got every piece you need, as far as I can see.
Yeah. You're not going to get a lot of, you know, pushback from me. I mean, I think there's times where, you know, maybe you'd like to see the pass rush be a little bit more consistent. I think that was something that, you know, Sean McDermott has talked about here. A couple of different times. I think they've had really good games and then maybe, you know, some so-so games in there. You know, passing wise, I think Josh Allen has played good. I don't know if he's played quite to the level that he played, you know, last year when you consider the whole body of work. You know, I think obviously recency bias is going to suggest that he's in pretty good form here, you know, with the way that he played against the Chiefs. The numbers that he put up, it was kind of a weird statistical game in terms of, you know, how many times he threw the ball and in the yardage that he threw for. His completion percentage wasn't really terrific, but, you know, that's all forgotten when you produce the way that he did. So, I mean, I certainly would not say that they're a team that doesn't have some weaknesses. They do. But, you know, this is maybe 3 or 4 games in a row now where we've left the game saying, boy, they kind of left some plays out there. They left some points on the field, and they're winning by 35 or 40 points in those games. You know, obviously the margin was a little bit closer against the Chiefs, but, you know, it was still a very comfortable 3-possession winning margin. So it's a scary thought if this offense and, you know, I would say the defense has really played terrific really all year long, but it's a scary thought if this offense really starts firing on all cylinders. And I think if you watch the games closely, you could maybe see that they haven't quite done that yet. And like I said, if that comes together, I mean, look out.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous what they've already accomplished, being the number one scoring offense and the number one scoring defense. And they're saying all the right things after a game of that magnitude on a Sunday night, that, you know, it is October, that there's still a long ways to go, that the goal is much larger than beating one Kansas City Chiefs team. But Jay, this is a team that was, I mean, they reached some incredible heights last year, getting to an AFC Championship game, but they were handled easily at times by that Chiefs team in that AFC Championship game. How much of the offseason was leading towards creating a team that could beat that Chiefs team? And how much, you know, import does that game have, just maybe even just psychologically beating that team that you lost to in the AFC Championship game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess I would stop short of saying all of it, but I'd say darn near 90% of it. I mean, you know, the Chiefs are the team that if you want to get to the Super Bowl, you have to go through in the AFC. I mean, they've proven that over the last couple of years. Certainly the way that, as you said, they handled the Bills, you know, rather easily in both meetings last season. So, yeah, I think a lot of the moves that this Bills team made this offseason were with Kansas City in mind, you know, particularly when you look at the way that, you know, they addressed the defensive line in the draft. You saw Greg Rousseau last night, I think, make, you know, maybe one of the plays of the game, if not one of the plays of the season for the Bills, with just a spectacular interception against Patrick Mahomes. You know, offensively, right? You know, you think, oh boy, the Bills, you know, were second in scoring offense last year. They had a great offense, but they went out and upgraded at number two receiver. They replaced John Brown. Emmanuel Sanders comes in and has just been terrific from the day that he got here, both on the field and off, in terms of what he provides in leadership. So I think having a player like that who has been through those big games, who has been to Super Bowls, who has won a Super Bowl, that is a really, really important piece. I think that leadership was maybe something that this team was missing. So for them to find that in Emmanuel Sanders, I think, was huge. And that kind of goes to what you were saying, too, about getting ready to prepare for the Chiefs. And you need players who have been through those experiences, and Emmanuel Sanders is one of them.
If they get into a situation playing in horrible weather in January or February, you know, and just need to grind it out with the running game, do you think they're constructed to do that if they need to? I know, you know, again, I know it's not, you know, 4 yards in a cloud of dust. There's a lot of things you can do with the passing game, even in horrible weather. But, you know, I'm just trying to find something here that they might not be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been better this year at running the ball. I think, you know, the games where Devin Singletary has sort of stood out, you know, Zach Moss has maybe not done as much. And then, you know, when Zach Moss has taken over, Devin Singletary's taken a back seat. And then last night it was Josh Allen running the ball, and he was their most effective weapon running. And I think Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, has sort of saved some of that, quite frankly. So, yeah, I think when you take all three of those pieces together, they can kind of cobble together a pretty competent running game. It's never going to be a situation where you've got, you know, one running back who you're handing the ball to 30 times and saying, you know, this is how we're going to beat you. They don't have that player on the roster, but what they do have, I think, is enough pieces to kind of put together an effective enough running game.
Hey, Jay, appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
There's Jay Skursky, Bills reporter for the Buffalo News. Hey, mark your calendar or put it in your phone. Rogers Hometown Hockey is back and coming to North Dumfries this weekend at the North Dumfries Community Complex to help kick off the NHL season. Free tickets available to celebrate Canada's game alongside Sportsnet's Ron McLean, Tara Sloan. Enjoy safe, family-friendly activities like free live music, meeting NHL alumni, and get featured on an NHL live broadcast. And for your chance to win a Rogers Hometown Hockey prize pack consisting of a signed John Tavares jersey, a customized voicemail from Ron and Tara. Go to our contest page at sportsnet.ca/590. I've been to the one in Oakville. It is a fun deal going
yes,
to Rogers Hometown.
I've been to several of them in several different spots. Yeah, I'm the plus one on Hometown Hockey occasionally. Yeah, it's a blast.
Yeah, and it's great that it is back. I don't think Brian Daboll is going to be back with the Buffalo Bills, their offensive coordinator. Like, it was kind of surprising not to see him picked up this hiring cycle in the NFL. Like, whatever happens here, almost what he's done with that offense and how unstoppable they appear to be. And again, like Jay says, not quite yet firing on all cylinders. And I believe that to be true. the mix and match of like, okay, maybe they don't have the traditional running back strength, but Josh Allen himself, when he holds onto the football, he's devastating.
Well, you know, and I was, you know, it's kind of pulling that. I just wanted something to think about. Okay, the Blizzard game in Orchard Park in January in the AFC Championship, and they're going to are they going to have to? But you know what? Aside from the team, you know, the next team they play, the Titans with Derrick Henry, you know, not a lot of teams have that guy anymore. Though, you know, that one guy you're going to give it to 30 times and just grind it out. And the quarterback can be that guy. You know, like Josh Allen is a big, strong young man, right?
He loves to feel the contact.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's you know, that solves it right there in some ways. I don't know how you feel if you're a Bills fan right now, given, you know, given the history of this franchise, given the rather checkered, you know, cursed history of this franchise at some level. Although getting the four Super Bowls in a row is pretty good. But how are you feeling right now being the overdog, right?
Yeah, it's a bizarre situation. You know, who feels that, and we'll see how they respond, is Canada's men's national soccer team, especially when they host Panama on Wednesday at BMO Field, a game you can watch on Sportsnet. We'll talk about this a little bit later on in the 6 o'clock hour at a little more depth, but I will say I had a different feeling watching that game against Jamaica than I thought I would going in. Yes, could they have won it? Were they the better team? Yeah, probably, in an overall sense. But CONCACAF, people keep talking about CONCACAF. It's weird, and winning away, picking up points away is always good, no matter who, even if they're at the bottom of the table, and they went into a match with just a single point, as Jamaica did.
Mm-hmm.
You just take that point and run, considering the quick turnaround from being at a mile high in Mexico City. You go to 35-degree weather with no fans on a field that looked like it had a pimple outbreak. Like, it is, Canada finds itself in a good spot as long as they win on Wednesday.
Yes, that's okay. There's the qualifier, right? Yes, they have to 3 points at home because they've played three road matches so far in this cycle, right? Point from the Americans.
Yep.
Point in Mexico. No one expected them to get that. Probably no one expected them to get the point against the Americans away. And then a point in Jamaica in a match. Yeah, they could have won. And Jamaica's not very good. But it was coming off that Mexico match. You're shorthanded. You had some guys on suspension. You have some guys who were hurt. You know you're going in. You know it's going to be hot. You know the pitch is going to be horrible. And you get out of there with a point. So that gives you the possibility to get out of these three matches with 5 points, with two of them being away matches, and sets you up, in theory, for the next cycle where you got two home matches in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all kind of a – but for that script to play out at BMO on Wednesday, they have to win.
Yeah.
You have to take care of business. And Panama, you know, Panama just beat the Americans in Panama.
Yeah.
They've been kind of all over the place, but they're going to be, it kind of looks like this is going to be Canada's last match is in Panama in March, right? The very last match is in Panama.
I think
Arash, feels like that might matter.
He's already packing his bags. Arash is getting ready to go to Panama for that game, which is, yeah. And again, that'll be a game where you'll feel ecstatic. Well, hopefully all you need, if you do need anything, it'll be a single point. But that'll be such a difficult place to pick up a point because, as you mentioned, the Americans went in there yesterday and could not accomplish that goal. I was watching some of the post-match reaction out of the Americans and seeing some of the stuff that Grant Wall wrote, great soccer reporter, about how the Americans, what they were saying after that match and how different it was after coming away with a couple of victories, one against Honduras where they trailed in the first half and came back, and then they ended up blowing out the Jamaicans, I think, 2-0. And the message was supposed to have been driven home to them that don't act like you've already qualified for the World Cup. Do not disrespect your opponents in CONCACAF going into this match just because Panama has never beaten you ever in World Cup qualifying. And I felt like they were talking to me because that's the way I felt going into that Jamaica game, because as well as Canada played against Mexico, who is a bona fide World Cup, not contender, but they're in World Cups every single cycle. To look that good, I thought it would be a cakewalk despite the fact that you're on the road. But this is CONCACAF. It's just you take that point and run if you're on the road.
And we talked to John Herdman last week, right? And that was certainly the vibe I got from him. Well, you know, coming off the Mexico match, and they were obviously thrilled and excited. But kind of looking at that Jamaica match and saying, like, yeah, we'll take the point. You know, we'll take the point, given everything. And then on to Wednesday, which is, well, the biggest Canadian soccer match on home soil for a long, long time.
It'd be nice to see that thing jam-packed. because I think there's a limited number of tickets still available at Canada-Panama on Wednesday at BMO Field. When we come back, no Austin Matthews for Wednesday's season opener for the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Montreal Canadiens, again in a full house at Scotiabank Arena. We'll talk to Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.